mouth. She wants to ride it, she's trying to hide it. I'm cool as ever, she's too excited. Her man look like he wanna fight. He ain't doing nothing but running his mouth. Talk about it, we all about it. They making plans, we sit and count. Our chair is stacking just like a mountain. You heard about it, she running her mouth.
I'm a little surprised to see you, sir. Sir being Joshy. Sir Joshy. I'm a little surprised to see you sitting across from me behind the glass this morning. I thought for sure you would be gone. Did you think that you would be gone?
Not for a moment. Not for a split second.
So yesterday... Go ahead, Shu.
You followed through, though, on the request, which makes you a sucker!
Or...
Talk about the pot calling the kettle black.
Ho, ho, ho. Give me a time out here. What are you talking about there, Mr. Bluebird?
Ho, ho, ho.
So, Joshy did something at the behest and request of his significant other.
Yeah.
What are you working on at your home right now, big guy?
Yeah, but I'm weak.
And what's wrong with that?
I wouldn't consider myself particularly strong when it comes to this stuff.
You do call your significant other Mussolini. Let's take some major cojones.
Which is a step further than exactly than Chewy would ever go.
I got to fight back somewhere.
All right, so let's let the loyal listeners in. What happened yesterday?
Yeah, so yesterday I was told there was a Target order for pickup, and I was asked if I could pick it up. And I said, yeah, sure, absolutely, I'll do it on the way home. It's rather convenient. And then, about an hour later after that conversation, I got also, you should buy Powerball tickets today. Because I had a dream about it last night, and I've never dreamed about the Powerball in my life. So I responded with a ha ha ha. And realized from that moment, like, yeah, I probably have to go do this. So I went, had to go to the ATM, take out $20, go to the gas station, which not all gas stations sell lottery, which was surprising to me. I found that out when I walked in. I was like, yep.
Wait, you had to go to multiple gas stations?
Walked up, slapped my $20 down and said, I'd like $20 in Powerball. And they're like, we don't do lottery. I said, all right, have a good one. Walked back out, bought my Powerball tickets.
How many did you have to go to? Just two?
Just two. Oh, it was. I just had to go down. It was like a couple blocks down the street, but it was something that surprised me. But I went knowing full well, because I'm not the type of person that believes dreams have any meaning, nor should I track down what they mean, because I think that would lead to some awkward interactions if we know about things that we all dream about at times. So I was like, whatever, I'll just do it, make Mussolini happy. And then I checked this morning. And since you hear my voice, I am not, which would be, I figured out it would be about $17 million after taxes, Richard. So, I'm here.
So I'm here.
So, yeah. Hi.
So if you're going on a flight to Wichita and Mussolini says, Josh, you shouldn't go. I had a dream where the plane goes down. You ain't listening.
I'm hopping on that plane. Gotta go. Wichita,
really?
Here I come.
I'd take any excuse not to go to Wichita, but that's just me.
I'm imagining I have some business there. Because, no, I would not.
It's not just a joy trip.
Right.
Chewy, do you believe in... Wait, hold on, Chew. Do you believe in premonitions?
Okay. Well, I have them, and some of them come true. I guess that makes me a medium.
Yeah, Nostradamus. Nostradamus.
You haven't been a medium since eighth grade.
It's a good point. Back to airplanes, though. I cannot watch movies about airplanes on an airplane. Is anyone with me?
So what? You can't watch... I mean, I'm trying to think
Top
of movies...
Gun.
Oh, okay.
I tried watching Top Gun. Couldn't do it.
I've watched Top Gun on planes about 18 times, so...
Which is
Jen spent more time on airplanes watching Top Gun than she did sleeping in 2024.
Than Tom Cruise has spent in an airplane filming Top Gun at this point.
That doesn't bother you?
No, what's your issue with it?
The movement, the herky-jerky, the turbulence, the crashing. I just can't do it.
But you're not going through the crashing part of that. You're just on the plane.
Well, as far as you know, Gabe.
Well, I mean, I'm talking to you right now, so if you were in a plane crash, I think I'd be aware.
I'm just saying, I had to turn it off. I can't do that.
What do you think? It's like bad juju? It's like tempting the fates, tempting the gods?
Yeah. Yes, totally. Hmm.
Interesting. But you believe in some of the premonitions you have? How do you know which ones to believe in and which ones to disregard?
Well, I'll tell you a true story right here. My brother-in-law had a dream. Didn't know that his dad was going up in a helicopter the next day. So had a dream about him going up in the helicopter and having it crash. He found out his dad was going on the helicopter, called him frantically and said, "Dad, whatever you do, don't, please just promise me you won't go on the helicopter. Promise me." And his dad didn't, and the helicopter crashed.
Whoa.
So he probably got that. Because I have dreams sometimes. I'm like, I don't know if it's, what do they call it where you, help me out here, Gabe.
Continue your sentence.
Deja vu. We'll, deja vu.
I knew that's where he was going. I knew that's where he was going.
Deja vu.
Okay.
So I've had dreams that I've had that have come true later on in life.
And that's where the deja vu kicks in.
Are you sure?
Yeah, positive.
What, you're calling BS on this?
He's saying that he's had dreams.
Yep.
And then he's remembered the dreams long enough that they have eventually come true. And he then has remembered that in years prior, he had dreamt about what just happened. Am I following that correctly?
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So give me an example.
Like I played for the Packers.
Did you also have a dream that you would win the Super Bowl one day, like every other red-blooded American boy who played football as a kid?
I've won more Super Bowls than I can count.
At least I didn't make my own ring like a tool.
We're going to get to that.
Yeah, I know we're going to get to that.
You're all over the place.
You are.
I know.
Lock it down. Okay, so if you get a premonition, or if someone gets a premonition or a dream, Joshy obviously is, well, sort of the relationship has led him to have to follow through. Gabe, if your wife said to you, "I had a dream last night of something, something, something," can you do this just in case, just on the off chance? And it's not a huge commitment. It's not like...
If it's not something huge, if it's like, hey, don't get on that plane, because also, like, my wife has been mad at me for a day because she had a dream that I did something mean to her, so then you got to deal with that.
Whomst among us have not taken
like, so now I'm getting the cold shoulder.
Yeah, what did I do in the dream?
Yeah, like, what can I do to make this better? Well,
Dario says, what did dream Dario do now?
Like, no, I... So yeah, I'm more on the side of Josh. You're like, yeah, these dreams, they're not really meaning anything.
Put it this way, I don't believe it, but I believe it in enough where it's like, hey, I could put in minimal effort and possibly have millions of dollars. I'll give it a shot.
Yeah,
I'll roll the dice
for $20. Yes.
Yeah.
If I have to like spend a bunch of money to redirect the flight,
right?
Probably not. Yeah, minimal effort.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, okay. I will play along for minimal effort.
I don't know, the flight thing. The percentage of flights that actually have major issues is very, very, very small. That's what they tell us all the time, anytime you have any hesitation about getting on a plane. But if a loved one said, like in Chewie's situation, hey, I got a bad feeling, like don't get on that plane, I'll divert. I'll change. I mean, and again, maybe it's different for me because I travel so much and, changing flights for me is old hat at this point. But if somebody I love said to me, I got a bad feeling about that flight you're supposed to take, say no more. Making the change. 1-800-DELTA. Here we come. Like, that wouldn't take much for me, to be perfectly honest with you, to change a flight. Now, that flight might get to its destination, no problem. I still wouldn't feel bad. I wouldn't be like, oh, what a waste of time. Grumble, grumble, grumble. I'd be like, yeah. But I don't know. There's something about big things. Now, if someone came to me and said, I had a dream that you won the Powerball, man, you could not stop me from running to the gas station.
Right.
You know, like I'm right there with you and Mussolini on that one.
Wait, she did dream that she won the Powerball, right?
Yes,
not
correct.
Not just generally about the Powerball.
And it kind of fell apart a little bit because the jackpot in her dream was $222 million. And I believe it was like 56 or something yesterday when they had the drawing.
Okay.
So we were a little off there, but it's millions.
I was going to say, it's not pocket change.
Right.
Are you now keeping more of an eye on Powerball? Because I'll be honest, I don't really keep an eye on Powerball until it like gets to such a high number that it makes the news and it's everywhere and you can't avoid it. But are you going to keep an eye on it for when it gets to $222 million? Well, and then throw your hat back in the ring.
That's the question. Do I just keep playing it until somebody hits the jackpot, or do I wait for the 200 number? Because at this point, I'm sort of pot committed. Like, they have it's two or three drawings a week, I believe, for the Powerball. Oof. Like,
what up?
I'm at gas stations enough or out enough where it's like popping in and stopping by isn't going that far out of my. And, you know, I could just do $10. I don't have to do 20. It was convenient. ATMs give you 20 a pop. So I just threw it all on the desk and said, let's go. So
I think you got to wait for the 221 number. I think that's what that's what you're waiting for.
Hmm. I think you go ahead, Chu.
What are your favorite dreams to have other than the obvious?
Hello.
Let's put a pin in that for 1 second.
No, because girls don't have that.
They don't poop either.
Oh, we're talking about those.
Wait, you didn't pick up on that?
Well, yeah. Eventually I did, but yeah, slow to the uptake. Hold on. I want to get to that. Maybe. Maybe. I'm not even sure we can, actually, now that I've said that.
Good Lord.
Because Dario will tell me that, too. I'll be like, had a good one last night. Yeah. All right, calm down. All right, I got the spray bottle over here. Like,
why are you doing push-ups on the wall to take a leak?
No, so Mussolini did not have a dream that said you were going to win this Powerball. That's the challenge of this quote-unquote premonition is there's a Powerball like a city bus, right? So, like, this is where you have to keep playing until, now.
No, I think you got to wait for the 220 number.
See, okay. But the thing is, the way Powerball works, it's not a steady inclining number.
It depends upon how many people
have played. Right, it depends on how many people have played, so 222 could just get skipped over. Now, if I ever see a 222, you bet your bottom dollar I'm playing
$100.
It.
Throw it all in.
Right, but like I have a feeling it's probably going to go like one day from 180, and next thing you know, it's 250, and you're like, well, did I miss my shot? Do I got to wait for the right shot to come? I don't know.
We're going to put
But that's like saying on a plane, you can't miss every single plane you go on because someone has a premonition, right?
Are people having premonitions often?
Look, man, I don't remember dreams, so.
Yeah, and when I do,
I can't decide, by the way, if that's a blessing or a curse. I can't decide if him never remembering his dreams is a good thing or a bad thing.
I'm not never, but I'm one out of 25.
Well, what is Mussolini? I think we need to know that. Is she one of these people who's remembering all of her dreams, and now you're committed to whatever she's dreaming about?
The amount I hear about the dreams, it'd feel like they're happening every day.
Josh, so you're saying you only dream one out of every 25 nights?
No, everyone dreams every night. It's do you remember them and do you take them in? Because most of the time, like, I'll have like a vague, but they're all like disconnected, don't really make sense. It's like vaguely remembering something. It's not, I don't have coherent dreams like many people seem to. And it seems like Gabe probably doesn't either.
Yeah, mine are clear as ever. Yeah. That's because I'm special.
It's the daytime thoughts that are a little murky, huh? We got to take a break here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. We are going to put it on the Jen, Gabe, and Chewy Twitter poll. Something along the lines of, Josh's girlfriend had a premonition about Powerball. Does he have to play Powerball until the end of time now? The premonition was that they won the Powerball. It wasn't just like, hey, there's a sign that says Powerball, or hey, I bought a ticket one time and that was the end of the story. No, in her premonition, they won the Powerball. How committed now is Joshy and his girlfriend? How committed do they have to be to playing Powerball? And by the way, do you have like specific numbers or is it just random?
I do the randomizer.
I mean, if you're buying $20 worth, that's a lot of different numbers.
Yeah. I'm a little nervous about filling out the sheet. How do I do it? Why do I do it? Just press the button, get back to me.
I think that's what they're banking on, though, aren't they? I don't know. I don't know how the Powerball works.
Random.
I mean, it's all random. I don't think they're banking on anything.
People do win that way. They say, I have these numbers that I always play and they end up hitting. But
correct.
there's also as many people that win just on the random.
Okay, that's what I didn't know. Yeah. I didn't know if there was a higher success rate playing your numbers or a higher success rate playing the randomizer.
I mean, if you go to Pottawatomie and see people have like little trolls and figurines on their on their slot machines, they'll tell you that's why they win sometimes, but I bet.
First of all, I don't see the trolls on the slot machines. I see that in the bingo hall.
That's a bingo hall.
I've seen like stacking them on the slot machines.
I've seen people bring out different little good luck trinkets that they'll put up. Yeah,
really?
Oh, yeah. In the cup holder. Check them. You'll see them.
Maybe that's what's going wrong for people that I go to the casino with. I won $700 on slots last week.
What was the good luck charm?
I guess just me.
All right. Someone's just got to pick you up and put you on the slot.
Bring you with.
Bring you with. That's easy. X-Golf, located at American Family Field. That's easy as well. It is open year-round, and it's a unique location because it's inside the ballpark overlooking left field, so you can see what's going on in the ballpark. But they have their 7 state-of-the-art simulators. The space is huge, though. It's unique. It's not like anything you've ever seen. So stop in. Even if you're not a golfer, try out some of the great food that they have. Or if you're in charge of planning that next corporate event, X-Golf at American Family Field is the perfect place to do it. They can set up games on the simulator. And like I said, you don't have to be a golfer to enjoy the space and enjoy the food and drink. Book your sim and find out more at xgolfamfamfield.com.
Ready? Down! Put!
All Packers, all the time.
He was a field-tilting player, and the reason why Gabe and many others are so concerned is that this guy's on the field, he changes the offensive dynamic. They are a different offense when he is there.
Okay, most of the time.
You know, Homer calls Matt LaFleur soft all the time. Matt LaFleur is like Vince Lombardi compared to me.
It's Jason Wilde on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
Lot of reaction rolling in on the Carbless Talk and Text Line, 800-990-3776. List is more. We should probably get Jason's reaction as well. Good morning, Jason.
Good morning, everyone. How are you?
We're good. Did you hear the dilemma? It's not really a dilemma, but the situation that Joshy finds himself in?
That he just won the lottery?
It's cute that you think he would answer the phone after he won the lottery.
Yeah. Sort of how my kids hear stories, by the way. They just pick a few details out and try to jam them together into something coherent. No, so his girlfriend told him she had a dream slash premonition that they won the Powerball. So she sent him out on a mission to purchase Powerball tickets. Now, they did not win yesterday. So what we're trying to nail down here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy is how long does Joshy have to play Powerball? Do they play until they win? Is it just till it reaches the number that his girlfriend had in her premonition? Is he off the hook since he did it once? What say you?
Well, how much did she win in her dream?
It was $222 million, which is not the amount of the Powerball right now. It is only in the 50s.
Yeah, I think you can only play. I mean, come on. If you're going to have a premonition, you got to get the details right, right? So once it hits, you got to play every time it's at $222 million, I would think. That'll save you a lot of money for not winning the lottery, by the way.
Interesting wrinkle. Hadn't considered it.
Would you show up to work the next day, Joshy? Or no.
If I won $222 million, hell no. Yeah. No way.
Not even to gloat?
No. No. That seems like a bad decision. I seem to put myself at risk.
Wait, are you one of those people that if you won the lottery, you wouldn't tell a soul?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't tell a soul. You wouldn't hear from me for
me
a long
too.
Time.
No, I'd still go to
Kaiser
work.
Kaiser Sose over there.
Yeah, just... I mean, to be fair, like, my job's great. Let's get that clear first. Put that out there.
Yeah. On the record.
Sometimes I got to do some stuff that necessarily I don't want to do, which, like, you know, I sleep in a little bit on occasion. That'd be nice.
You think your dog's letting you sleep in at this
point?
Good point.
Jason. Statistically, hello, buddy. Statistically, the offense and the defense, I guess, finished in the top 10. Did it feel like it to you?
Certainly not down the stretch with the offense. And look, Josh Jacobs was obviously the engine that put them there at a level that they had not had even with my guy Aaron Jones. So, no, it just felt like it was always off. And even during that run when they had, what, 5 straight games, Gabe, of 30 or more points?
Correct.
It never quite felt like it was Like, it was almost like you got to the end of the game and you're like, oh, they scored 30 points again, right? Like, you just never got the sense that they were really humming. And so, no, that's a great question. We might have to steal that, like we stole your where are the Packers in relation to the Super Bowl teams question, which was also outstanding. But yeah, I did you ever feel like they were really
coming?
I just never did.
But Jason, I've been banging on the drum. I don't think LaFleur wants to be a 50-50 team. I think he wants to be a little more elevated in the pass game than the run. Would you agree with that or no?
Yeah. But let's be honest, they all do, right? Like,
yeah.
Holmgren wanted to be, McCarthy wanted to be. I mean, maybe Sherman in 03 really enjoyed the run the ball because he was a tight ends coach. I think they always want to throw the ball, and they know the quickest way to the end zone is generally through the air. So, yeah, I do think that. And that, again, is why I look at this past season as this kind of petri dish that it took a while and still has not fully figured out what was growing in it. And now this is the off season where they got to get in the lab and figure out, you know, all right, we have these ingredients for an offense, but we did not figure out exactly how to meld them together for it to be optimal. And Josh Jacobs, as we've talked about multiple times on this show and across our shows, has been a great thing. There's no denying that. But to make it a really, really, really great thing, you have to figure out how to marry up what Josh Jacobs does well in the run game with making the pass game and the play-action game more effective. And to me, that is Matt LaFleur's biggest challenge for the offseason.
Jason, a lot of folks were surprised by Rich Bisaccia getting another year added to his contract with that report coming out yesterday. But the thing that I'm most interested when it comes to that, Rich Bisaccia, game management advisor, is that something he had been doing, or is that going to be a new part of his role with getting the extension?
No, that's what he's... I know you watch the games. I was going to say something snarky then, and it would have been mean-spirited, and I don't want to be that guy. But you watch the games, right?
Yeah.
Like, LaFleur is talking to him all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so that has been his role. I don't know if I've ever seen anyone include it in... like Spoon did in the story per se. So I don't know if that's he does have the assistant head coach title, right? I mean, so there's got to be other responsibilities that come with that. But they're always talking about situations. Anytime you see Matt LaFleur on the sideline and he's not, screaming or yelling at an official or getting too emotional, he's usually talking to Bisaccia. So, yeah, I think that's something that Bisaccia has always done. I agree with you that seeing it in Spoon's story made me wonder that is not, like, if you go to the website, it doesn't say Rich Bisaccia, special teams coordinator, assistant head coach, game management advisor. But I don't think there's any question that that's one of the areas that he's been very active with Matt LaFleur.
I mean, why would they give him another job when he can't do his normal job well? What the hell are they doing there? I'm sorry.
Yeah, again, it's like
Luke Getsy. Jason, it's like Getsy. You went to the Bears, fired. You went to the Raiders, fired, and then went to the other side of the ball, and let's bring him back here.
Yeah, I mean, look, first of all, I would think there's been a lot of coaches that have coached for the Bears and the Raiders who were good coaches, and that's where good coaches go to die, or at least go to get fired, right? I mean, those are two highly dysfunctional franchises. Now, have they hired guys that weren't good coaches? Sure, of course they have, right? But I'm not saying Luke Getsy is the same as this guy, but Josh McDaniels has been an abject failure as a head coach. Agreed?
Yes.
Without a doubt.
But that doesn't mean that he's not a good offensive coordinator, right? Like, Ray Rhodes was a good defensive coordinator. Was he a good head coach? No. You know, he gave players way too much rope and tried to treat them like men, and it didn't work. I mean, there's always coaches that rise one rung above where they should be on the ladder. I mean, you could argue if we're being honest, that Joe Barry is a good linebackers coach and should have never been a coordinator, much less three times, right? But, you know, when you get fired from those roles, that doesn't mean that you don't know what you're doing. Like, I'll say this, you know, whether it's Davante Adams, who had him as a wide receivers coach, or Rodgers, who had him as a quarterbacks coach, I think Luke Getsy is viewed by players as a guy who helps you get better and is insightful and is helpful. So I don't know what his role is going to entail, but
where I get skewed, Jason, is our roster in 92 was horrible. It was not very good. Yet we still won 9 games, and that was because of Holmgren. He probably won 5 or 6. So that's where I get skewed. If you're a good coach, you find a way to win, even though if you're void of talent. That's why I'm so skewed. I'm like, God, we should have won 5 games that year, and we wound up losing the last game of the year to Minnesota to miss the playoffs.
I don't know what Antonio Pierce did or was doing. Like, I don't know enough about the inner workings of the Raiders. Obviously, I know enough about the Bears to say that they're just. I mean, and maybe Ben Johnson is the magician who will finally, you know, turn them into a successful franchise. But again, I just think that there's lots of coaches that go to situations that, you're right, Holmgren elevated you guys. There's no denying that. He was also the head coach. He also had, what was it, after 2 games where you guys had lost your first 2 games, and he's wondering if he's ever going to win a game in the NFL. Like, you know, again, he's going to go into the Hall of Fame, right? He better.
Yeah.
And so he was the type of coach that could get you stumble bums to win more games than you should have in 92 because of his greatness. I don't think anybody is looking at anybody on the Packers' current staff and saying, that guy's going to be a Pro Football Hall of Famer someday.
Jason, what does your gut tell you about how some of these other coaching positions shake out, whether it's Stenovich, whether it's Jason Vrabel? Do you think that they will, I guess they're drawing interest from other teams? Stenovich does not call plays, but maybe at some other spot he would. I assume that's something he wants to do, just to continue evolving, progressing in his position. What does your gut tell you about how those will shake out?
Yeah, I don't know how many more offensive coordinator play caller jobs are open or going to be open. I mean, obviously the only unfilled head coaching job left is the Saints, right? I didn't miss one. So I don't know if they hire Kellen Moore, who I think they flew to go interview in Philly. You know, he would be a offensive head coach who also calls the plays. So, look, I love the fact that LaFleur was ready to allow Steno to take, if they had hired him, the Seattle offensive coordinator job, because that's obviously a defensive-minded head coach in Mike McDonald. He would have been the play caller. You know, Sean McVay did the same thing for Matt. You know, when he was the Rams offensive coordinator, he wasn't calling the plays. The opportunity came up with the Titans and with Mike Vrabel, and he allowed LaFleur to make a lateral move so he could be a play caller. I think Matt was willing to do that for Steno, too. I know that Matt LaFleur believes that Jason Vrabel is a coordinator in waiting. I don't know when that's going to happen and which team it's going to happen with. To me, the question the Packers are obviously facing is, you know, what exactly is Matt LaFleur's plan with the quarterback's coach? Is he going to hire someone from the outside? You know, we saw Bobby Slowick get let go by the Texans. We know Scott Tolzien, who was with Mike McCarthy in Dallas for the last several years, is available. He was the quarterback's coach for Dak Prescott and Cooper Rush. And then obviously you've got your two remaining candidates on staff now that Luke Getsy is going to have a title. Is it going to be Sean Mannion, who not only John Schneider, the GM of the Seahawks, said is going to be a head coach in this league someday, but now has had a year in the quarterback's room to kind of learn the ropes after transitioning out of his playing career? Tausch wants it to be Dan Orlovsky, just so I'm irritated. I don't think that's going to be the case, but the fact of the matter is he's got 2 spots to fill on his own staff, And I think the hiring cycle is starting to slow down, which I think is good news. Like, I think that would allow Matt LaFleur and Steno and all those offensive guys, like I said, get back in their laboratory and figure out, all right, we've got some really good pieces on this offense. They didn't come together the way we wanted them to this year. We got to figure this stuff out.
All right, Jason, we appreciate you hanging out with us this morning. Have a great one. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right, everybody. Take care. Be good.
Listen to Jason Wilde on Wilde and Tausch right after Jen, Gabe, and Chewy each and every morning right here on 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee. Yes, it does seem like, according to PackersNews.com, that there are several offensive coordinator positions still available. In this list, they have the Houston Texans, the Raiders, the Jets, the Cowboys, the Saints, the Bucks. It says, so Stanovich could wind up elsewhere still. I just wish I understood, like, how all of these pieces work together between when Tom Clements was here and Matt LaFleur and Rich Bisaccia and Jason Vrabel and Adam Stanovich. Like, how do they all, like, come up with the game plan? Or, like, just I'm very curious about, that's a lot of cooks, right? Matt LaFleur's calling the plays, obviously, but I'm curious about, Bisaccia has the most input when it comes to game management. I mean, he has the title. I'm just very curious about how all of these roles sort of fit together to create the offense for the Green Bay Packers. We got to take a break here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy, but we will roll on right after this. Tune into the Analysis Show every week. It's presented by Gruber Law Offices. The Nassis Antetokounmpo hanging out with special guests for fun and surprising conversations. Maybe it's his live show with his brother Giannis, a chat with Green Bay quarterback Jordan Love, getting the inside scoop on fighting with Logan Paul, or any one of his unique guests. Find The Analysis Show on Apple, Spotify, and wherever else you get your podcasts. Plus, you can subscribe to The Analysis on YouTube to see exclusive video content from Thanasis. The Analysis Show is presented by Gruber Law Offices. One call, that's all.
This is Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
You want more physical harm beset upon people who are trying to earn a living.
I want winners. If someone has to die in order for us to win, then that's the price you pay.
On 94.5 ESPN.
Chewy, if you missed any of our conversation with Jason Wilde, you can, of course, find it on Wisconsin On Demand or wherever you get your podcast. Gabe, can you refresh my memory?
Okay.
How did Packers special teams perform this year?
According to Pro Football Focus, they were last. if you look at the ranking that, now I'm blanking on his name, from the Dallas newspaper, he had them at 29th. So, you know, they performed relatively low.
So yesterday, Chew, when it was announced that Rich Bisaccia, yes, very kind of you, Gabe, that Rich Bisaccia had been extended, what was your reaction?
Laughter. Laughter.
I mean, why?
Because you fire the D-line coach for underperforming. Maybe it's because he didn't underperform because he finished the same place he did the year before. You know, I just don't get it. And when it comes to Vrabel, I mean, they're gushing over Vrabel, and we're going to go over a list of players who regressed, and there's receivers on that list. That should be your measure when it comes to the coaching staff. How did your players perform? Did they get better or did they get worse? Now, I'm not an advocate of firing coaches after 1 year of regression, but I mean, if you look at this list, that tells you why they only went as far as they did, you know? And I've said it a million times, you know, C players got to play like Bs, Bs got to play like As, As got to play like As.
Does that tell you, though, that Matt LaFleur interprets the special team's struggles? And you just rattled it off. It's, you know, one of the worst units in the league. That, yeah. Matt LaFleur thinks that's a player's thing as opposed to a coaching thing? But, or does it tell you that Matt LaFleur values Rich Bisaccia as his, what is the title? What's the other title? Besides being the special teams coordinator,
he's the associate head coach.
That he values that role of Rich Bisaccia more than he values him as the coordinator of special teams.
Or maybe he doesn't value special teams at all. I mean, look, one of the greatest coaches I've ever had was Nolan Cromwell, you know, because he put it in players' heads that special teams is its own entity. You don't use special teams to show your talents so you can move up the list of your position, okay? You don't treat it. You know, you don't disregard it. And one thing, and all these coaches have them. Like, the one thing that drove me nuts about Mike McCarthy is he didn't care about penalties. I'm like, how can you care about penalties? Penalties are a form of discipline, right? And it goes back to Holmgren. Let the little things slip, then you let the bigger things slip. Special teams under Holmgren were like, there are three phases to the game. Offense, defense, and special teams, and they're all equal, right? Maybe you don't buy that. Maybe you're trying to sell that. But I know we bought into it, right? We bought into it because Nolan wouldn't let us.
Did you?
Gabe, our special teams under Swollen Nolan were top five.
Yeah, but you keep telling me about how sometimes, you know, you'd roll one back there. Or you were Rocket Man because you like to snap it over the punter's head because you were trying to get off of special teams.
That's why we had Frankie Winters in the bullpen. I can only take it five innings, right? I had a pitch count.
On long snapping? You had a pitch count on long snapping?
Absolutely.
I guess I'm just trying to figure out, Chu, what the conversation was. Rich Bisaccia, your special teams unit was one of the worst in the league. But you also happen to be my assistant, and I go to you on some of these critical decisions. Game management, I believe that's in the title. Well, Matt LaFleur's game management wasn't all that great this year. So yeah. I'm just trying to figure out, like, I'm sure they're having tough conversations. I'm sure they recognize that they underperformed in both of those categories. But the extension, was there some, you know, this goes back to what we always talk about. Was there some group out there that was clamoring for Rich Bisaccia where Matt LaFleur needed to lock him up, Gabe?
Well, so I think, and again, I know I'm the only, because I basically really don't care a lot about the special team stuff. I'm guessing in Rick Gosselin's, that's the guy's name from the Dallas Morning Star, I'm guessing in his ranking, for the Packers to finish 29th, a lot of that is because the Packers missed a lot of field goals early in the year. Because according to the story that is up at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, the Packers were number two in the league in kickoff coverage. Okay, so how are you number two in the league in kickoff coverage at 29th in special teams? Like, two in the league in kickoff coverage, that to me, okay, that's being coached well by your guy, and by Rich Bisaccia. And missed field goals is one of those things
that's not
Bisaccia's department, right? Like, no special teams coach in the league is teaching technique on field goal kicking. So that's more of a guy that once they figured that out with McManus, everything was fine. So maybe that's something that LaFleur's looking at going, well, we were two in that ranking and kickoff coverage. That's what he's actually coaching. And he's good there. Let's extend him for another season to keep him around because he is my trusted advisor.
Let me throw this out there as well, Chu. Could this be a personality thing? Could this be Matt LaFleur recognizing some of the details of his personality and saying, I don't have this, but Rich Bisaccia does, and he can sort of complement or supplement some of the things that I might not have from a personality standpoint. Is there some of that you think might have gone into him aligning with keeping Rich Bisaccia?
No, I just think it's an old boys network. It's what it is, you know. He's a good guy. I've known him for a while. I don't know. I mean, it's clear when they did this, they don't value special teams as much as they do offense and defense. I mean, how many of those kicks were returned to Gabe? I mean, did they cover 10 kicks in the entire season? Because everything seems to be kicked out.
I don't have that information. It's just in the article, they were number two in kickoff coverage, 19 in kickoff returns, which were both improvements from 2024.
Well, again, in the PackersNews.com article, and I know it's not great to read on the radio, but it says, Bisaccia's units also had some bad moments during the season, starting with kick returner Keyshawn Nixon's decision to return a ball from 8 yards deep in the end zone with 27 seconds left, and the Packers down 34-29 in the season opener against Philadelphia. I can dismiss that. first game of the season. Keyshawn Nixon, right? I can sit there and dismiss
Keyshawn
those.
Went to business for himself.
Nixon also fumbled on the opening kickoff of the playoff game, setting up the Eagles for a touchdown and an early 7-0 lead. You can make the argument as well. Keyshawn Nixon, right? I don't want to put everything on the coaches. But then there is this. Bisaccia also didn't have his team ready for a trick punt return against Chicago that resulted in a 94-yard return in Week 18. In the same game, LaFleur called a timeout on the Packers' final possession of the game that gave the Bears enough time to drive for the winning score after the Packers had taken the lead on the 55-yard field goal. That's game management, right?
Yeah, but that one's also on LaFleur. It's not like he went to Rich and went, hey, should I call timeout here? He called the timeout right away. Like, that was, and ultimately it does come down to Matt LaFleur. Like, yeah, you've got this advisor, you've got all these coaches, but you're still the head coach. It all still comes down to you. You get the blame, you get the credit, you get all of that.
It just, to me, it screams of their standards for different coaches. You know, the standard is insane for the D-line coach as it is for the special teams coach, as it is for the receivers coach. As it is for the tight end, which I don't think is good.
Well, but again, Chu, if they're number two in kickoff coverage in the league, like, isn't that what Bisaccia is coaching? Wouldn't that stand a reason that Bisaccia has no control over who the kicker is? That they decided to have their kicking competition
and then Narvison. When you're the highest paid D end in the league, when you're the highest paid receiver in the league, when you're the highest paid special teams player in the league, I expect you to be top five, top three.
Well, but if you've got a kicker missing a bunch of kicks, that's not on you.
That's why, and I'm okay taking that out. But 19th in kickoff return? Come on.
Look, I want to push everything through the prism of expectations are very high in Green Bay. Team had a good year. We always go back to the record. But they did underperform. I think we can all agree to that. And so when you're looking for explanations for why they underperformed, and you're seeing the numbers that are being thrown out there about special teams, and you're seeing Rich Bisaccia not getting more control, not getting more assignments, but being extended as opposed to just standing pat, it does feel like there's a complacency. Joshy, am I wrong in saying, like, this? It doesn't feel right. The things we're talking about here don't line up with then this guy being extended.
Yeah, I mean, it comes off as complacency to me with just kind of running it back with the, like, we've talked about running it back and how the Packers can't do this next season. I think you can attribute things to Rich Bisaccia, kind of how you see fit. There are people who do rankings that factor in other things like punt return, yardage, tackle, like efficiency. You can find people who do that. The Packers still don't rank very well in all that stuff, even with factoring in more factors than the kickings made or missed, because that is a huge factor. And as Gabe said, you can't really force them to make kicks. But there are things that seem like, knowing that he's the in-game management advisor like that and how those things popped up in multiple situations throughout the year, and frankly throughout Matt LaFleur's history with Rich Bisaccia, it does make me wonder, like, is he either not using him correctly, or are those two just not a good match together? Because some of the things are, like, pretty obvious that Matt LaFleur has done, where it's like, did you not talk to Rich before then? Or do you guys not have, like, a good system here on how you're doing this?
That's the more interesting thing to me, is that getting out of the bag of, hey, he's the game management advisor. Like, that's infinitely more interesting to me, because I think a lot of those things have a lot more impact on games than a lot of times special teams
do. I would agree there.
I think the point that you guys are making is all of that stuff has to be philosophical. It cannot be in the moment, Matt LaFleur unsure of what to do, leaning over and going, hey, Rich, I got a minute here. Let's figure out what we want to do on this down and distance. It has to be a philosophy within the organization of, when this situation presents itself, this is how we choose to handle it. Well, and whether that's based on analytics or whether it's based on gut, I'm not exactly sure. But I think you can't be sitting there in the moments going, hold on 1 minute. Let me just check with my advisor.
I agree. Who already has another important job. I mean, why wouldn't they have just one guy dedicated to that up in the box, looking at replay, saying, yeah, throw the flag. Throw the flag.
Well, that is a different guy, Chu. Like, that's not, Bisaccia's well, not telling him to challenge anything. When I see game management advisor, I think that's a lot of, hey, when are we going to go for it on fourth down? When are we going to be calling timeouts? Do we want to call it before the 2 minute warning, after the 2 minute warning? More management stuff like that. I think they have somebody else up in the booth who is looking at the replay stuff. That is a completely different job.
Yeah. The one thing that, like, popped up multiple times, and Matt LaFleur just, like, kind of took blame for it, is they didn't seem prepared when they were going to be going for it on fourth down and the structure leading up to it. So it almost seemed like a surprise, like, well, we called a bad play on third down, so we couldn't go for it on fourth, but we would have gone for it on fourth had we had a better play on third down. And it's like, well,
yeah, but
shouldn't you guys be ahead of that,
yeah,
knowing like, the stakes
hey,
of the game?
Which is crazy. Where I'm at, yeah, like, right. Let's run this play to set up this play.
Right.
Well, how you make the call sheet is you list five fourth down plays in the game. And it's ranked 1 through 5.
Mm-hmm.
All right. If you used one, then you go to 2. That's how it works. Why is it so difficult? I mean, the play should already be there. When someone's saying go for it on fourth, he should go number 1. Okay, here's what we're running.
Honestly,
oh, we used that one. Number 2. That's what we're going to.
Honestly, I think it's just a philosophical decision of that's not even made. Jen, to your point. I think that needs to be made before the season. Are we going to be a team that's aggressive like Washington, like Detroit, or are we not? Right, you don't want to find yourself in a game. Well, they've gone for a bunch on fourth down, so now we have to. That is a philosophical decision they got to make going into the season. How aggressive do we want to be on fourth down? And then you stay true to who you are. That's why Washington gets it a bunch on fourth down, because they know when they have 3rd and 5 at the 35. Oh, we got 2 plays to pick this up. Like they already know that. The players know that because they know they're going
Gabe,
for it.
There should be no confusion because when we go into the game. Okay, there are 5 plays from the 20, there's 5 from the 15, there's 5 from the 10, there's 5 from the 5,
mm-hmm.
right? And then they rank them after we practice that on Friday. Friday is red zone offense. So when we're on the 20 for the first time, we already know what number 1 is. It shouldn't be difficult. Players already know what their favorite play is. And then when you run that, then you go to 2. And then you go to 3. And then you go to 4.
So my question to you is, Chu, at what point did that, because did you guys become that comfortable? Were you comfortable with, oh, yeah, we know that this is what it's going to be in 92, 93? Or is that more of a, as everybody grew together, everybody was on the same page with that
well,
stuff?
Well, you know what it is, but you can't recall it because it's your first year running the offense. You know, when we got to, when Free was there for 3 years, me and Robert were there for 5 or 6 years, then you know, you recall it. You know what's being dialed up. So early on, you're like, shoot, what's the 3rd play on the list? And then they call it, obviously, and then you're like, oh, I know what I'm doing. But that back then, everything's built in, all right? Plays are built in for what they think they're going to call. Let's say it's cover 3, right? Cover 3, Holmgren calls the play, they're in cover 2, okay? We have in-game adjustments to account for that. Okay, because that's what it is. It's a chess match, right? You call it. You hope they're in that coverage. If it's not, then something is built into that play to beat that defense, and the quarterback should know that. I don't know if they know because Jordan's so young. But back in the day, Brett would go, ah, shoot. This is Dino, cover 2, not great. Okay, I'm going to the X here. X has got to win. If not, bing, check down. That's how it works.
We're going to put it on the Jen, Gabe, and Chewy Twitter poll. How do you feel about the Rich Bisaccia extension? Good? Bad? Let us know. 800-990-3776. That's the Carbless Talk and Text line. Liss is more. We'll take a break. Be right back after this.
This is Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
I thought Salvation every time Army. That they hear their name when it's non-scheduled, that's what they want to hear.
I could hear Ashy laughing in the background.
Am I right or wrong?
He's not wrong. Hey, he's not wrong.
He's
not wrong.
He is wrong.
On 94.5 ESPN.
Hey, what's the plan for power ranking second hour of the show, which technically started 1 minute ago?
Technically still the first hour. Yeah, technically, it's still the first hour of the show.
Technically, it's the second hour of the show.
No, the second hour starts when the second hour starts. This is the fourth segment, which is the last segment of the first hour.
Yes, I agree. But we are way behind on the clock, getting further behind by the second here as you and I debate the logistics.
Gabe's treating it like special teams. He doesn't care.
Chew, what's the power ranking situation? Are we doing power rankings?
Oh, sugar.
Yeah. Suddenly I'm the one who doesn't care.
Help, Josh. Josh, help.
Way to come prepared, Rich.
Oh, I'll come up with something. I always do.
There goes the return on the punt return. We just got fooled.
Wait, there's a penalty.
Yeah. It'd be funny if it weren't so true, actually. We got a lot of stuff to get to in the second hour of the show. Have you guys seen the ring that Za'Darius Smith posted on social media? It's glorious. What the hell is it for? The heck is it for? We're trying to figure that out. We'll discuss that in the second hour of the show. Plus, Josh, you found a story about 5-minute showers. And I guarantee there's nobody on this panel that's taking 5-minute showers. The big guy doesn't wash anything from his...
I was about to say, I don't know if you should
down. So
speak
maybe
out of turn here.
Maybe. Maybe the big guy could get in a shower in 4:59. We roll on right after this.